The Declaration of Independence was the logical extension of the revolution that was started by the Boston Tea Party. It was signed by 56 people, politicians, doctors, Protestant ministers, merchants. Nine of them were farmers. Ben Franklin, a little hard to define. Mr. ADD is what I would call him. He had 37 careers in his life. The last one was creating the United States of America. He could never hold a job. Thrown out of school in the third grade. They ranged in age from their 20s to Franklin, who was in his 80s. Thomas Jefferson was 33 years old when he signed the Declaration of Independence. That was about the average age. These men were the most idealistic and determined among the colonists, while the conservatives of the day argued that America should remain a colony of England forever. These liberal radicals believed in both individual liberty and societal obligations. A nation must care for the lives of its own, guarantee liberty, and ensure its citizens' happiness. A radical concept that had never before appeared in any nation's founding document until Thomas Jefferson wrote it into the Declaration of Independence. As the signers wrote at the end of the Declaration, "We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." And it was a simple statement of fact. The day they signed that document, each legally became a traitor and was sentenced to death for treason by the legal government that controlled their lands and their homes. As Ben Franklin pointed out, they stood at a point of no return, and as he said, "Indeed, we must all hang together, otherwise we shall most assuredly hang separately." When Rhode Island's Stephen Hopkins signed the Declaration of Independence, he remarked to his friend William Ellery, "My hand trembles, but my heart does not." But Virginia's Benjamin Harrison, who weighed nearly 300 pounds, said to Massachusetts's Elbridge Gerry, a short, thin man, "With me, the hanging will be over in a minute. You're going to be dancing in the air for an hour after I'm gone." John Hancock, the wealthiest among them, by the way, Hancock's wealth in today's dollars would be well less than $1 million. The first American millionaire was in the 1790s, in today's dollars. These people were what today would be called the upper middle class. Many of them. Some of them were just, you know, middle class. They were, as I said, farmers, and I'm not talking about estate owners. John Hancock, the wealthiest among them, signed his name large enough that, as he said, "The king could read my name without glasses and can now double the reward of 500 pounds that had already been put on his head for sedition." Just 6 months later, John Hancock would lose his newborn daughter to complications of childbirth arising from his wife's fleeing the oncoming British army. He founded no dynasty. No foundations today dispense his money. His legacy is our nation. And the company that bears his name, he had nothing to do with starting and is now owned by a foreign company. Another of the wealthiest of the signers was Thomas Nelson of Virginia, but a year after signing, the British had seized his home and lands when he and George Washington attacked the British in his hometown. Nelson encouraged Washington to attack his own homestead, where British General Cornwallis had taken as his headquarters to attack it with cannons. The house was destroyed. After the war, Nelson, unable to repay loans he'd taken out to help finance the revolution, lost his property and died in poverty at the age of 50. Robert Morris, a Philadelphia merchant, lost everything, wiped out his small fortune. Signer William Ellery of Rhode Island similarly lost everything, as did Virginia's Carter Braxton and Benjamin Harrison, Pennsylvania's George Clymer, New York's Philip Livingston, Georgia's Lyman Hall, and New Jersey's Francis Hopkinson. All of them died destitute as a consequence of having signed the Declaration of Independence. The British destroyed New York's Francis Lewis's property, threw his wife into such a hellhole of a jail that she died after 2 years of it. Three of South Carolina's four signers, Edward Rutledge, Thomas Hayward Jr., and Arthur Middleton, were captured by the British and held in a filthy, unheated prison and brutally tortured for over a year before George Washington was able to free them in a prisoner exchange. New Jersey farmer John Hart's wife died shortly after he signed the Declaration of Independence. His 13 children were scattered among sympathetic families to hide them from the British and the conservative loyalists. He never saw them again, dying alone and racked with grief 3 years later. Altogether, 17 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were completely wiped out by the war they declared. New Jersey State Supreme Court Justice Richard Stockton took his wife and children into hiding after he signed the Declaration, but conservatives loyal to the Crown turned him in. He was so badly beaten and starved in the British prison that he died before the war was over. His home was looted. His wife and children lived the rest of their lives as paupers. Altogether, 9 of the men in that room died. 4 lost their children as a direct result of putting their names to the Declaration of Independence. Every single one had to flee his home. And after the war, 12 returned to find only rubble. After the war was over, and the conservatives had fled to Canada and England, the survivors of the new American nation met to put into final form the legal structure of the nation they had just birthed. It was not to be a nation of cynical, selfish libertarians who believed the highest value was individual freedom and independence from society, or that the greatest motivator was greed. It was not to be a kingdom ruled by a warlord elite. It was not to be an oligarchy ruled by the wealthy families. It was not to be a theocracy where religious leaders made the rules, as had been several of the states, particularly Massachusetts. And it was not to be a feudal nation ruled by the rich, as Benjamin Franklin told Philadelphia's Mrs. Powell after she asked him what sort of nation had been conceived in the Constitutional Convention of 1787. He said, "It was to be a republic, madam, if you can keep it."